Welcome to Global Talk, a foreign affairs podcast from The National. This week's episode comes from Shatila, a Palestinian refugee camp in southern Beirut that is known to most people as the site of a horrific massacre in 1982 during the Lebanese Civil War. But to find out what it's like to live here today, we spoke to Abu Mujahid, a longtime resident of Shatila whose name is known by practically everyone in the camp. He is also director of the camp's Children and Youth Centre, an NGO that provides educational and psychosocial support for 6 to 18-year-olds, as well as a place to play. But before we start, there is something you should know. Shatila is extremely overcrowded. As a result, privacy and quiet are hard to come by. From early in the morning until late at night, there is a constant noise coming from outside, permeating the thin walls of people's homes. You'll be able to hear it in the background of this recording, and we hope it doesn't put you off.
Shatila, as you said, is famous, but unfortunately with the blood and with pain, with suffering, with depression, with frustration.
I began by asking Abu Mujahid what life is like in Shatila now. But to really answer this, he first had to give me a bit of a history lesson and go right back to the beginning.
This camp has been established in 1949 for 3,000 people. And when the people came to this place for 3,000, it was okay. But with the time and the natural increasing of the population, the piece of land started getting smaller or tight for the people.
He explained that over the years, many poor Lebanese had come to live in the camp, along with poor Palestinians who had previously lived in the countryside and suburban areas of Lebanon where there were few economic opportunities. And then later came poor Syrians looking for work.
So as poor people, they start searching somewhere in Beirut or around Beirut. So the camp and surround camp, what they call it, misery belt, they found a place where can survive easily and like with people like them.
During Lebanon's 25-year-long civil war, the camp was almost completely destroyed, he said. But after the war ended in 1990, people began coming to Shatila in huge numbers. These included Palestinians whose camps had been completely demolished during the war and who had nowhere else to go.
So Shatila suddenly, from almost empty camp to 8,000 camp, 8,000 people. And then it became 12,000. Then it became 18,000. 18,000, it's beyond the capacity of the space or the place of Shatila. Shatila was having just two floors. Suddenly it became 5-6 floors. Otherwise, nowhere to stand on the land. Shatila, from the beginning, having shortage with the electricity, with the water, with the environment issue. So with this big amount of population, it became hard to find electricity or to find drinking water. The wells became salty water because the sweet water finished and the sea water came. And then United Nations, through UNRWA, who is responsible about the social issue of the camp, they say that we are not responsible but all those people who are living in the camp. So they start reducing their services more and more in the camp. So the garbage everywhere, the health became threatened, and the education became threatened, and the number of the dropout of the student became more, and the hygiene issue or the sickness of the health or breathing, the heart or the other kind of disease spreading in the camp, which wasn't before.
This went on until 2011, he said, when things suddenly got much worse.
But what make it more tragedy or more difficult, misery, the Syrian war. Suddenly, about 5,000 to 6,000 people gaming in Shatila and surround Shatila. And then the life became unbearable. First of all, you can't say no for those people because they are coming like us before. They are coming, fleeing out of, from the death. And they came, some of them, your relatives. So you have to share with them what you have, bread or water, or you have to share with them the space or whatever. So Shatila reached to 22,500 people.
The reality of Shatila is made all the more clear upon leaving the camp and walking 10 minutes westwards. Suddenly you find yourself on a wide open street lined with brand new apartment blocks, smart cafes and a yoga centre. You can get some idea of the difference in population densities by looking at Shatila and the surrounding areas on Google Earth. What that aerial view won't show you, however, is the height of the buildings and how many people are living inside each one. In Shatila, many families live in just a single room. Abu Mujahid and others living in the camp told me that some of Shatila's residents had left to make the difficult and dangerous journey to Europe.
The only way the number is reducing in the Shatila or other where like Shatila is the immigration. Because those people, Palestinian from Lebanon before, or who came from Syria, or Syrian, they are seeing that no hope for them to live here. Their dignity is injured every day. They are humiliated every day. No right to work, no right to build, no right to own a house, no right to establish anything, no right to have normal life. What the people pain mainly, that they are isolated, margin, and nobody interests with them seriously. I don't want the speeches, I want the reality. For example, Lebanese government should consider this piece of land, which is the camps, part of its the territories which it's responsible about. So they don't consider themselves responsible with anything about these areas, which the Shatila or other camps, and they look at it as responsibility of UNRWA, who is always screaming, we face shortage, we are facing shortage of fund, shortage of assistance by the donors or by the United Nations or the governments.
But Palestinians, Lebanese and Syrians are not the only people now living in Shatila. There are also poor immigrants from other Arab countries and from South Asia. And there is often distrust of other nationalities. One resident warned me about watching out for thieves because Palestinians are not the only people living here, she said.
You have to talk about the integration. The integration among the community, when the people has to remain so long and no soon solution, you start feeling that we are not one. So you start feeling that they are Lebanese, they are Kurds, they are Syrian, they are Palestinian, they are Gypsies, they are Jordanian, you have Iraqis, you have Asian. So who can control these people in a land where there is no control? And with the poverty, the crisis increased. And the social disease increased. So it's not strange to find the violence very high, or to find the drugs used is very high. So in general, I have to say, we are lucky really, in spite of all this mess, in spite of all this difficult life, we are not in the front 10 killed people every day. This area has no law, no control, no authority, and still people say good morning, good evening. They still smile in each faces, and still they, if somebody sick or if somebody die, you find or you see the sympathy or solidarity or support from all the neighbors or all the people around. But that doesn't mean life is easy to be in camp. Doesn't mean to feel yourself are always condemned or every day you are humiliated.
Lastly, I asked Abu Mujahid if he had any hope for the future, that their situation could improve.
I hope that situation can be changed. But unfortunately, after Syria story, which came after Iraq story, which came after Libya story, which came after Egypt story, Tunisia story, people thinking the journey is too long. I don't know how long they can wait.
You can follow our online coverage of Palestinian, Lebanese and Syrian news at thenational.ae/world and follow us on Twitter at The National Rome. That's ROAM. Thanks for listening.